Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week, Chris Hedges gives a stirring speech on the rule of sadism, the oppression of the American people, and the necessity of rebellion. I hope you'll stay tuned. Chris Hedges is an impressive combination of journalist, essayist, activist, and prophet. He spoke on June 27, 2021 in Troy, New York. His hour-long speech started out kind of general, familiar sounding, and perhaps a little too academic to make really good radio. But the speech slowly built up steam and passion, and the words became more concrete. Hedges really hit his stride about halfway through, and by the end I was saying, wow. The thesis is that sadism defines every aspect of American life, especially the oppressive rule of the power elite. That includes Mr. Biden, who is at least their servant, if not their peer. The great necessity now is coordinated, effective popular rebellion. Not just amateurish, haphazard insurrection like the Trumpians staged at the U.S. Capitol, rather something a bit closer to an actual revolution. The talk is titled American Sadism, and we are going to pick up in the middle. Here is Chris Hedges.
The obscene avarice of the very rich now dwarfs the hedonism and excesses of the world's most heinous despots and wealthiest capitalists of the past. In 2015, shortly before he died, Forbes estimated David Rockefeller's net worth at $3 billion. The Shah of Iran looted an estimated $1 billion from the country. Ferdinand and Imelda Marcos amassed between $5 and $10 billion. And the former Zimbabwean president, Robert Mugabe, was worth about $1 billion. But Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk are each worth $180 billion. Yes, the decorum of the Biden presidency differs from that of the Trump presidency, but the underlying mercenary exploitation and sadism of American society remains untouched. Biden's American Jobs Plan will never create millions of good-paying jobs, jobs Americans can raise their families on, any more than NAFTA, which he supported, would, as was also promised, create millions of good-paying jobs. His mantra of buy American is worthless. The vast majority of our consumer electronics, apparel, furniture, and industrial supplies are made in China by workers who earn an average of $1 or $2 an hour and lack unions and basic labor rights. His call to lower deductibles and prescription drug costs in the Affordable Care Act will never be permitted by the corporations that profit from the healthcare system. His promises of fair taxation, despite the world's richest men, Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, Warren Buffett, Carl Icahn, Michael Bloomberg, and George Soros, paying a true tax rate of 3.4%, will not be altered. The corporate subsidies and tax incentives he proposes as a solution to the climate crisis will do nothing to halt oil and gas fracking, shut down coal-fired plants, or halt the construction of new pipelines for gas-fired power plants. His money for infrastructure projects is destined for large corporations and state governments. The health system will remain privatized, meaning the insurance and pharmaceutical corporations will reap a windfall of tens of billions of dollars with the American Rescue Plan, and this when they are already making record profits. The profits the big banks, Wall Street, and the predatory global speculators make from the massive levels of debt peonage imposed on an underpaid working class including those who owe student loans, will continue to funnel money upwards into the hands of a tiny oligarchic cabal. There will be no campaign finance reform to end our system of legalized bribery. The giant tech monopolies will remain intact. The censorship imposed by digital media platforms, the obliteration of our civil liberties, and the wholesale government surveillance will continue to be enforced. Biden's request for $715 billion for the Defense Department in fiscal year 2020, an $11.3 billion increase over 2021, will exacerbate the military provocations with China and Russia, the endless wars in the Middle East, and the bloated defense industry. The industries that were shipped overseas and the well-paying unionized jobs will not return. The 81 million Americans that struggle to meet basic household expenses, the 22 million that lack enough food, and the 11 million that can't make their next house payment are about to hit a wall. As the meager benefits from the COVID relief bill runs out and the moratorium is lifted on evictions and foreclosures, the grinding machinery of predatory capitalism and the sadism that defines it will poison the society as mercilessly under Biden as it did when Trump was conducting his Twitter presidency. These so-called reforms have no more weight than those peddled by Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, who Biden slavishly served and who also promised social equality while betraying working men and women. Biden is the epitome of the empty, amoral creature produced by our system of legalized bribery, those who built our culture of sadism. His long political career in Congress was defined by representing the interests of big business, especially the credit card companies based in Delaware. He was nicknamed Senator Credit Card. He has always glibly told the public what it wants to hear and then sold them out. He was a prominent promoter and architect of a generation of federal, quote-unquote, tough-on-crime laws that militarized the nation's police and more than doubled the population of the prison system, the world's largest, with harsh, mandatory sentencing guidelines and laws that put people in prison for life for nonviolent drug crimes, even as his son struggled with addiction. He was a principal author of the Patriot Act, and there has never been a weapon system or a war he did not support. Nothing substantial will change under Biden despite the hyperventilating about him being the next FDR. The Biden administration resembles the ineffectual German government formed by Franz von Papen in 1932 that sought to recreate the Ancien Regime, a utopian conservatism that ensured Germany's drift into fascism. Biden is bereft, like von Papen, of new ideas and programs. He will keep the machinery of repression well-oiled, a machinery he was instrumental throughout his political career in constructing. Those that will resist will be attacked as agents of a foreign power and censored, as many already are being censored through algorithms and deplatforming on social media. And the most ardent dissidents, such as Julian Assange, will be criminalized. The established elites pretend that Trump was a freakish anomaly. They naively believe they can make Trump and his most vociferous supporters disappear by banishing them from social media. The Ancien Regime will, they assert, return with the decorum of its imperial presidency, respect for procedural norms, elaborately choreographed elections, and fealty to neoliberal and imperial politics. But what the established ruling elites have yet to grasp, despite the narrow electoral victory Biden had over Trump and the storming of the Capitol on January 6th by an enraged mob, is that the credibility of the old order is dead. The Trump era, if not Trump himself, is, unless we break the stranglehold on corporate power, the future. The ruling elites embodied by Biden and the Democratic Party and the polite wing of the Republican Party represented by Jeb Bush and Mitt Romney is headed for the dustbin of history. The growing ressentiment of the dispossessed is stoked and fed by a mass media that has divided the public into competing demographics. Media platforms target one demographic, feeding its opinions and proclivities back to it, while shrilly demonizing the demographic on the other side of the political divide. This has proved commercially successful, but it has also split the country into irreconcilable warring factions that can no longer communicate. Truth and verifiable fact have been sacrificed. The Democratic Party, in a desperate bid to control the media narrative, has built an alliance with the social media industry giants such as Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, Patreon, Substack, and Spotify to curtail or censor its critics. The goal is to herd the public back to Democratic Party-allied news organizations such as the New York Times, the Washington Post, and CNN. But these media outlets, which serve corporate advertisers, have rendered the lives of the working class and the poor invisible, and they are as reviled as the ruling elites themselves. The loss of credibility has given rise to new, often spontaneous groups, as well as the lunatic fringe that embraces conspiracy theories such as QAnon. They traffic in emotional outrage, often replacing one outrage with another. They provide new forms of identity to replace the identity lost by tens of millions of Americans who have been cast aside. This emotional outrage can be harnessed for laudable causes, such as ending police violence, but is too often ephemeral. It transforms political debate into grievance protests at best, and more often televised spectacle. These flash mobs pose no threat to the elites unless they build disciplined organizational structures which take years and articulate a vision of what can come next. And this is why I support Extinction Rebellion, which has a large grassroots network, especially in Europe, carries out effective, sustained acts of civil disobedience, and has a clearly stated goal of overthrowing the ruling elites and building a new governing system through people's committees and sortition. This emotional outrage, which put Trump in the White House, also stokes the fires of American sadism, especially among a white working class that feels dethroned and abandoned. The breakdown of our society is not only political. It is ecological. Scientists have long warned that as global temperatures rise, increasing precipitation and heat waves in many parts of the world, infectious diseases spread by animals will plague populations year-round and expand into northern regions. Zoonotic diseases, diseases that jump from animals to humans, such as HIV/AIDS, which has killed approximately 36 million people, avian flu, swine flu, Ebola, and COVID-19, which has already killed some 4 million people, will ripple across the globe in ever more virulent strains, often mutating beyond our control. The misuse of antibiotics in the animal agriculture industry, which accounts for 80% of all antibiotic use, has produced strains of bacteria that are antibiotic resistant and fatal. A modern version of the Black Death, which in the 14th century killed between 75 and 200 million people, wiping out perhaps half of Europe's population, is probably inevitable as long as the pharmaceutical and medical industries are configured to make money rather than protect and save lives. Even with vaccines, we lack the national infrastructure to distribute them efficiently because profit supersedes health. And those in the global south are, as usual, abandoned, as if the diseases that kill them will never reach us. Israel's decision to distribute COVID-19 vaccines to as many as 19 countries while refusing to vaccinate the 5 million Palestinians living under its occupation is emblematic of the ruling elite's stunning myopia, not to mention immorality. What is taking place is not neglect. It is not ineptitude. It is not policy failure. It is social murder. It is murder because it is premeditated. It is murder because a conscious choice was made by the global ruling classes to extinguish life rather than protect it. It is murder because profit, despite the hard statistics, the growing climate disruptions, and the scientific modeling, is deemed more important than human survival. The global elites thrive in this system as long as they serve the dictates of what Lewis Mumford called the mega machine. The convergence of science, economy, technology, and political power united into an integrated bureaucratic structure whose sole goal is to perpetuate itself. This structure, Mumford noted, is antithetical to life-enhancing values. But to challenge the mega machine, to name and condemn its death wish, is to be expelled from its inner sanctum. There are no doubt some within the mega machine who fear the future, who are appalled by the social murder, who worry what will happen to their children, but they do not want to lose their jobs and their social status to become pariahs. The U.S. military, which accounts for 38% of military spending worldwide, is, of course, incapable of combating the grave existential crisis before us. The fighter jets, satellites, aircraft carriers, fleets of warships, nuclear submarines, missiles, tanks, and vast arsenals of weaponry are useless against pandemics and the climate crisis. The war machine, which is spending $1.2 trillion to modernize our nuclear arsenal, does nothing to mitigate the human suffering caused by degraded environments that sicken and poison populations or make life unsustainable. Air pollution already kills an estimated 200,000 Americans a year, while children in decayed cities such as Flint, Michigan, are damaged for life with lead contamination from drinking water. And on top of all this, the U.S. military emitted 1.2 billion metric tons of carbon emissions between 2001 and 2017, twice the annual output of the nation's passenger vehicles. Future generations, if there are any, will look back at the current global ruling class as the most criminal in human history, willfully dooming billions of people to mass death. These crimes are being committed in front of us, and with few exceptions, we are being herded like sheep to the slaughter. The radical evil that makes this social murder possible is perpetrated by the colorless bureaucrats and technocrats churned out of business schools, law schools, management programs, and elite universities. Demonic non-entities. These systems managers carry out the incremental tasks that make the vast, complicated systems of exploitation and death work. They collect, store, and manipulate our personal data for digital monopolies and the security and surveillance state. They grease the wheels for ExxonMobil, BP, and Goldman Sachs. They write the laws passed by the bought and paid for political class. They pilot the aerial drones that terrorize the poor in Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, and Pakistan. They profit from the endless wars. They are the corporate advertisers, public relations specialists, and television pundits that flood the airwaves with lies. They run the banks, they oversee the prisons, they issue the forms, they process the papers, they denied food stamps and medical coverage to some and unemployment benefits to others. They carry out the evictions, they enforce the laws and the regulations, they do not ask questions. They live in an intellectual vacuum, a world of stifling minutiae. They are T.S. Eliot's hollow men, stuffed men, shape without form, shade without color. Paralyzed force, gesture without motion. These systems managers made possible the genocides of the past. They kept the trains running. They filled out the paperwork. They seized the property and confiscated the bank accounts. They did the processing. They rationed the food. They administered the concentration camps and the gas chambers. They enforced the law. They did their jobs. These systems managers, uneducated in all but their tiny technical specialty, lacked the language and moral autonomy to question the reigning assumptions or structures. The Russian novelist Vasily Grossman, in his book Forever Flowing, observed that the new state did not require holy apostles, fanatic, inspired builders, faithful, devout disciples. The new state did not even require servants, just clerks. This metaphysical ignorance, the product of an educational system that is primarily vocational, greases the cogs for the culture of sadism and social murder. We will not extract ourselves from predatory capitalism and its culture of sadism with meager government handouts. We will not extract ourselves because Biden's slick speechwriters and public relations specialists who use polls and focus groups to feed back to us what we want to hear can make us feel the administration is on our side. There is no goodwill in the Biden White House, the Congress, the courts, the media, which has become an echo chamber of the privileged classes or corporate boardrooms. They are the enemy. We will extract ourselves from this culture of sadism, the way the dispossessed extracted themselves from the stranglehold of crony capitalism during the Great Depression, by organizing, protesting, and disrupting the system until the ruling elites are forced to grant a measure of social and economic justice. The Bonus Army World War I veterans who had been denied pension payments set up huge encampments in Washington, which were violently dispersed by the Army. Neighborhood groups, many of them members of the Wobblies or the Communist Party, in the 1930s physically prevented sheriff departments from evicting families. In 1936 and 1937, the United Auto Workers carried out a sit-down strike inside factories that crippled General Motors, forcing the company to recognize the union, raise wages, and meet union demands for job protection and safe working conditions. Farmers, forced into bankruptcy and foreclosures by the big banks and Wall Street, founded the Farmers Holiday Association to protest the seizure of family farms, one of the reasons bank robbers such as John Dillinger, Bonnie and Clyde, and the Barker Gang were folk heroes. The farmers blocked roads and destroyed mountains of farm products, reducing supply and raising prices. The farmers, like unionized auto workers, endured widespread government surveillance and violent attacks from the FBI, company goons, hired gun thugs, militias, and sheriff's departments. But the militancy worked. The farmers forced the state to accept a de facto moratorium on farm foreclosures. Mass demonstrations outside state capitals at the same time pressured state legislatures to block the collection of overdue mortgage payments. Tenant farmers and sharecroppers in the South unionized. The Department of Labor called their collective action, quote, a miniature civil war, end quote. The unemployed and the hungry throughout the country squatted in vacant homes and on vacant land, forming shanty towns that were known as Hoovervilles. The destitute took over public buildings and public utilities. This constant pressure, not the goodwill of FDR, created the New Deal. He and his fellow oligarchs understood that if there was not reform, there would be revolution, something Roosevelt acknowledged in his private correspondence. It is not until people are reintegrated into society, not until corporate and oligarchic control over our educational, political, and media systems are removed, not until we recover the ethic of the common good that we have any hope of rebuilding the positive social bonds that foster a healthy society. History has amply illustrated how this process works. It is a game of fear. And until we make the ruling elites afraid, until a terrified Joe Biden and the oligarchs he serves look out on a sea of pitchforks, we will not blunt the culture of sadism and social murder they have engineered. Rebellion, however, must be its own justification. It is a moral imperative, not a practical one. It not only erodes, however imperceptibly, the structures of oppression, but it sustains the embers of empathy and compassion, as well as justice, within us that defy the sadism that colors every layer of our existence. In short, it keeps us human. Rebellion must be embraced finally, not only for what it will achieve, but for what it will allow us to become. And in that becoming, we find hope. Thank you.
Chris Hedges, with a rousing conclusion to his June 2021 speech, American Sadism. And in Darkest Connecticut, I am Kenneth Doust, with a quieter conclusion to this week's New World Notes. newworldnotes.blogspot.com. Thank you for listening. Illegitimi non carborundum, and please tune in again next week. Till then.